And it's 8:30. It is time for BitWizard's Tip of the Wand. In studio this morning, I have Jason and Sam. Welcome to both of you guys.
Good morning.
Good. I hope you guys had a good weekend, did you?
Oh, we did. It was a little by a little too quickly.
It does.
You know, and spring forward's always fun.
Yeah, it was a 47-hour weekend.
47. Did you get caught with that? Anybody? Did you get caught on Sunday? Like, I was supposed to go to church at a certain time and I missed it. Charlotte, how about you? No, she did. She got caught. Okay.
Yeah, it was awkward for me that I showed up late for church because I was supposed to have started preaching about 10 minutes before I got there. So I'm just kidding. I didn't do that.
Did you call it in? You can always call it in, you know. That's the way it works. All right, guys. Well, I guess we might as well just get right to it here.
BitWizard's Bits and Bytes.
What's up your sleeve? Well, no, that's the next one.
That's our Bits and Bytes part right now. So I saw in the news that Microsoft, actually, this is on Verge's website, Microsoft is allowing and encouraging its employees to work from home as the novel coronavirus outbreak continues to spread in countries around the world. The software giant has updated its guidelines for employees, allowing anyone based in Seattle or San Francisco to work from home through March 25th. Microsoft is also recommending that those who are feeling sick, have a compromised immune system, or have had contact with someone diagnosed with COVID-19, the disease caused by novel coronavirus, should work from home.
Now, I think it's a pretty good idea so you don't spread it, because they're talking about a lot of other companies where they're going in and spreading it to each other and the companies are having to shut down.
Yes, and so Microsoft's trying to be proactive about this now and encouraging their employees to work from home if they can. And I thought, well, you know, even just a few years ago, that would be really, really hard to tell people just to work from home, because everything you have for work is at work. All of your work stuff is there. And so I thought, well, actually, things have changed a little bit. So considering the coronavirus spread, many companies are encouraging their employees to work from home. So I thought Jason and I could talk a little bit about how you can keep your business running with your employees working from home, or how you could work from home if you needed to, if you weren't feeling well and you didn't want to risk spreading anything, that how you could work from home, whether it's coronavirus or just you're not feeling well and you want to work from home without spreading it. So I thought this would be a good place for us to start this morning.
Yeah, and it's almost like Microsoft is showing off a little bit. I know they're doing the right thing, but
they always show off.
You know, in our world, when you use an enterprise-grade Microsoft Office 365 product, working from home almost becomes seamless. So it's a great product, and they're going, yeah, you can work from home because it's going to be like you're working from here. But, you know, things like VPNing to the office. VPN.
That's probably very important, isn't it? Really, if you're going to be working maybe like a Microsoft, because everything is secure.
Right.
Yes.
It's extremely secure. But a VPN to connect back to your home office, your servers, things like that. VPN stands for Virtual Private Network. It's a little app that runs on your laptop that encrypts your data. So that transmission from your home network over your home Wi-Fi back to the office stays encrypted, and all that information that remains private back to your office. Also make sure that all the policies are in place for that laptop, that work laptop, so your virus scans are still running. Everything that your IT department is making sure happens at work is still happening on that computer.
That's right. And with that VPN tunnel, it's essentially connecting you wherever you are. If you're working from home, it's connecting you to your office, and so that your computer essentially thinks it is back at the office. It's on the same network. Even though it's going over the public internet, it's completely secure. Nobody can sniff the traffic and nobody can see what you're working on, but it makes it a very secure connection. And as far as your computer is concerned, you're back at work. And so if there's printers you need to print to at work, you can still print to the printer at work.
Oh, really?
If there's file shares at work and you need to grab that file from the file share from the server, you can do that. It might be a little bit slower because you're going over the internet, but you have the option to do that. Even if you needed to remote into your work computer from a laptop, you can set that up also. You just kind of have to set it up on the firewall first at your company. So in your business, make sure that you have an enterprise-grade firewall that has those VPN capabilities built in. And then, as Jason said, it's just an application that you would run on your laptop, or you could even get a separate firewall put in at your house specifically designed to directly connect over that VPN tunnel to the office. Now, that's if you have all your files are at work, but a better way of storing your files so that you can work remotely is by putting them into the cloud.
Right, which is actually kind of interesting, because working in a technology field for almost 20 years, I mean, 15 years ago, it was really cool to have a VPN and be able to access everything from work.
Yeah.
Now it's, you know, we still have a VPN at BitWizards for ourselves, but everything's on our cloud. Everything's on our office, our Microsoft Office SharePoint site.
Okay.
So everything's out there. So if there's one thing that I have to do to connect to the VPN. I'm almost rolling my eyes now. So we really enjoy that seamless connection with BitWizards because all the information is still secure out there. It's still in our secure cloud, which, let's face it, is more secure than being on an on-site server. And we can just go out there and pull it out. So, yeah, I do roll my eyes when I'm like, oh, man, I got to connect to the VPN again.
Yeah.
Hold on. What's my password?
And we recommend.
You mean you don't store that?
It's on a post-it note under the bottom of his keyboard.
1113.
And we recommend using this cloud storage for all of your files normally anyway. There's no reason not to store your files in cloud storage. And that, in the Microsoft world, looks like SharePoint or OneDrive or OneDrive for Business. Google have their own Google Docs or Google Drive that is sort of their equivalent. Dropbox is a very famous one as well. And as long as you're storing your files in any of these cloud storage mediums first, that means that even though it is on your computer, it's also being there's a copy of it running on someone else's server somewhere, and so then you can connect to that same service, whether it's Dropbox or OneDrive or SharePoint, and then those files will be available to you from your laptop. So we definitely recommend that. Now, one of the other issues then, if you're going to be working from home, is a lot of work involves communication, and I'm guessing for the most part you probably are not going to want to use your personal cell phone to make work calls or to set up meetings, and so we have some recommendations even on how you'd maintain your communication.
Right. So everyone knows about Skype. Everyone knows, you know.
Oh, yeah. That's old technology, yeah, really. Unless they've got a better.
Right, right. Well, now Skype has kind of morphed into Teams for work and things like that. But it used to be Skype Business. They've gone through a couple different names. We had, you know, we have a hard time keeping up sometimes. But now it's Teams.
Okay.
But Teams really allows you to connect with that instant messenger type of feeling. And there's other options out there such as, what is that?
There's RingCentral, there's Zoom, there's lots of different online technologies, and most of them are priced really well in that they're priced in like the Microsoft Office model where you're only paying for the users or the employees you have. You're not having to pay for an entire phone system to be set up in your building with servers and PBX servers and all of the different stuff that used to have to happen for you to be able to have VoIP or voice over IP phone systems.
Right. So I don't even have to take my phone out of the office anymore. I have an application running on my iPhone where
that's right.
If my work phone rings at my desk, it's ringing on my iPhone at the same time. And I can actually make calls out using that app so it shows like I'm actually sitting at my desk. So it's very integrated, very seamless. If I get a voicemail at my desk, it pops up on my phone, and sometimes I can't even tell which number is ringing here.
That's right.
So it's pretty neat.
Oh, that is really cool. Mm-hmm. So like it reminds me, all these telephone solicitors probably do something like that.
Absolutely.
Because they throw another number out, so it looks like, oh, it's a local number.
Yeah.
So, okay, I got you.
Nice and easy for them. And the only drawback to doing that is making sure the kids and the dog stay quiet in the background while you're on this important business call. And pretending to be at the office. And then our last recommendation, if you're allowing your employees to work from home or if you're going to work from home, is to make sure you have a solid backup solution in place. And the reason for that is we're going to cover this a little bit here, but there's a difference between business class hardware and consumer class hardware. And so if you're going to be working on your personal laptop or on an iPad or on a Chromebook or something from home, there's a good chance it's not as reliable as the technology that you use for work. And so because of that, you need to make sure that it is backed up and that you have a way to restore it so that when you do get back to the office, you can pick right back up where you left off back on your work computer again and make sure that everything is still synchronized.
Okay, I was kind of wondering of that because like when you get Microsoft 10 or Windows, I should say, Windows 10 or 7 or whatever, you can always get the home version or the professional version.
Correct.
I always wondered what the big difference was between the two of those, and it sounds like that is going that direction.
That's absolutely right. And I think that's going to be our main topic for today, is that we can talk about the differences between those two different types of technologies, whether it's IT for your house or that you're used to, that your kids play with, or whether it's IT for your business that is designed to keep your employees productive and keep your business running. And so even here at BitWizards, it's something that we do for our clients is set up these environments for them to be able to work remotely. Some of our clients only work remotely. We work with a defense contractor right now that doesn't even have an office location because all of their employees are spread out, and they can do that because they have this Microsoft cloud technology at the middle of it all.
I know somebody like that. They work for the defense. He's a contractor, and he has a home office, doesn't even have an office on the base.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. And do everything from that. and he's got it all teched out with all of the big screens and everything, and it communicates all the time through, you're talking about, through, you know, they're doing meetings, and so everybody's got to be quiet while they're doing the meeting. So it's the same idea.
That's pretty exactly cool. Right.
All right.
Bit Wizards, what's up our sleeve?
Besides rippling biceps.
So we did touch on this a little bit. We're going to really dive into you know, the differences between a consumer IT versus a business IT. Lots of small and medium-sized businesses treat their company IT like their tech at home. While the devices may be similar, there's a big difference between consumer tech and enterprise business tech. We'll highlight some of those key areas to consider here. Okay. So, I mean, one of the biggest things that we talk about is productivity and collaboration. You know, an iPhone, your iPhone notes, a lot of people make notes with their iPhones and their Android devices,
yep,
versus having a OneNote and SharePoint, you know, having that cloud connectivity with Microsoft Office built into a Windows device or Windows laptop.
So it's not just local, it's on the cloud.
That's right. It seems like such a small difference because this is really what we're talking about here is sometimes it's very hard to see the difference between the consumer grade and the business grade software and hardware. But even your Notes app is a good example of that. That you have the Notes app on your phone. You probably use it when you're jotting down ideas, and everybody uses that to keep track of their thoughts. And maybe you've gone a little bit bigger and used Evernote or a service like that so that you can make sure your notes show up on your other computer. But then when you transition to a business class version of note taking, we have a product like OneNote, which is from Microsoft, and it stores its files within SharePoint Online, so everyone in the company can have access to it, or you can restrict access as needed. But what's really nice about that is it's the next level up, which means you get things like support that come with it. You get collaboration so that you can have in our company, we may have 35 people all at once in the exact same Notes app, all taking notes during a meeting, and it's able to keep track of all of those changes, when people made the changes, and attribute those to different people within the organization. And I'm not here talking specifically about OneNote. I'm actually just talking about the difference, though, between business class apps versus consumer apps. And a good example of that might even be Gmail versus Office 365.
Right. So, I mean, Gmail, we all know Gmail. Well, most of us have a Gmail account, but having an Exchange Online with Gmail, the security level, but let's just go straight to that, you're just not as secure. You're not going to be encrypted as, you know, you would be on an Exchange Online. So having that device, having that service of your emails, your calendars, and everything syncing back to your business Exchange server, your Exchange Online server, is going to always stay up to date. It's going to be secure. Whereas you're relying on Google with Gmail, which, you know, Google's a pretty large company.
Right. Yeah.
But they've got their hands in everything. So you've got a application over here that's run by a company that's got their hands into everything, and they want to know everything about you. And that's how they make their money.
Sure.
Over here versus a Microsoft Exchange Online server, where they're just dedicated to making sure that your information is secure, that it's up to date, that it's being sent through as quickly and efficiently as possible.
And they're not selling your information.
They're not.
That's exactly right. Because it's an old adage, and it's true that you get what you pay for. And so it's easy to say, well, you know, I've had a Gmail address for like 15 years, and it's worked fine. I get email. But understand that the purpose of that, whether it's Gmail or Yahoo or any of these, I'm not singling anyone else out, but these free email services, the way they make their money is by basically reading your emails, the content of it, and figuring out who you are and what kind of things you like and who you're connected to. And they're mapping all of this out into what's called a graph, where they're trying to figure out all the correlations between people and what they like and what they do. And that way they can target advertising to you, and they can sell your information to advertisers. Whereas with Office 365, you're paying them to not get into your email. You're actually paying them a little bit each month per user to make sure that you have business class email that will stay up when you need it. It'll still be there when you need it. That you won't have an @gmail.com or @yahoo.com or @AOL.com email address for your business. That it is actually set up for your business. And it's not just the productivity and the collaboration, the difference in business versus your home tech. The bigger part of it is probably the security and the governance aspect of running your business on business class software and hardware.
Absolutely. And that's one of the biggest things that we, you know, get outside and put our sandwich boards on and walk down the street going, you know, stay secure, people, please. You know, if you're using something free like Gmail and you're sending a document out that has someone's social security number or a driver's license, and it happens all the time. Like, yeah, I'll send this credit app off from my email, my Gmail. Well, that's not the best practice because that is going across the public internet. There's no governance there. There's no security there as well. And it just opens you up to a whole slew of issues that you just don't want to have to deal with.
It really sounds like business is not the way you want to go with Gmail or any of these other public ones. That would be good for family. You want to, you know, stay connected with your family, just a little stay up with grandma or Aunt Mary, whoever it might
be.
But business, you want to keep that secure, like you're talking about social security numbers or any other things, like maybe your credit card numbers or things of that nature. You don't want to expose it. It sounds like that's a convertible going down the road and everybody has a chance to look in, you know.
That's exactly right.
And that also speaks to, you know, I bought a house last year and they'd say, send me off the information. I need this, this, this. And we all know how it is buying a house. And like, okay, what's your email? Well, I'm blah, blah, blah at yahoo.com.
Nope. But
that's just not going to happen. I'm not sending it. Well, fax it to me. That's still not going to happen, you know?
Well, and as a business, you're more of a target for the bad actors out there. If there, if there's a bunch of bots on the internet scanning people's IP addresses and everything, they're looking for businesses. In fact, there are these targeted campaigns where they will do all the research they can on your business by looking at your website, by seeing if they can get someone in the company to email them, even if it's just a nonsense email that they send. If they can just get a response and they can see what the signatures look like on the emails within your company, they can figure out who the head of HR is, who the head of finance is within your organization, because you've listed that on your website and they've got these email addresses, and then they can pretend to be someone from HR or from finance emailing you, and it looks like it came from them because they've already got the signature and all of that. They can't really do that, or they don't even bother doing that with home stuff, because what are you going to do? But with businesses, they're definitely being targeted more. And so it's important to think of the IT security for your company differently than you do for your house. You might not want a firewall at your house because it's just trying to watch Netflix and catch up on Facebook. But at your company, you have to understand that for your business, you are being targeted constantly, where you're being surveilled by people looking for ways to get into that company. And even if it's not malicious intent, even if it's accidental within the organization, having business class software and hardware ensures that you have things like retention policies in place so that someone cannot accidentally forward themselves some private company information or something that you would not want to fall into your competitor's hands.
Gotcha.
That it doesn't leave the business. And that's why business tools are designed around that. In fact, it's not just the services, even the hardware and the software. There's a difference in the business class hardware and software than there is in consumer grade.
Right. Especially if you have a compliance factor in your business. I mean, if you've got a HIPAA compliance and you're sending things over Yahoo or Gmail, nothing, you know, not a knock at those guys, but stop.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sure HIPAA wouldn't think that's very cool.
No, not at all.
No, that'd be bad because that could really hurt somebody. I was thinking, you know, you're talking about all these different ways that people can research your company and then try and maybe be somebody like or act like there's somebody within your company sending out to everybody, and they do that, and that would be a perfect idea, I would think, for somebody doing ransomware.
Oh, because absolutely.
Because then you click on it thinking it's going to be your boss or something and then download it, and here we go.
Yep. In fact, we call that, it has a name, it's called spear phishing. It's like a phishing attempt, but it's targeted at a single person because they have said, we've done the research on this organization, and if we can encrypt all of their files, we have a good idea of how valuable that is to them because we can see from public information a lot about this company, and so then I can target specifically, and I'll try to find the weak point within the company, and I'm going to target that one person and try to attack there. And that's why it's important to have these business class. Like we talked about even at the beginning, the difference between Office 365 for home and Office 365 professional. And
right.
So there's definitely, both are fantastic services. But when you get the professional version of Office 365, whether that's an enterprise class license or a business class license, you get additional features and security settings that are built in. A good example of that would be that I have policies set up on our email that says if someone attempts to send out an email that has a social security number in it or a credit card number in it or these commonly identifiable private information things, that I can flag up a warning and say, I don't think you should send this. Or I can set up a rule that says if an email comes in and it has some sort of executable built into this PDF, and when you double click it, I can make sure that doesn't happen, which wouldn't normally happen in a home version of Office. The home version of Office, you get Word and Excel and Outlook, and all of that is fantastic. And so I recommend it for every house. It's only $60-$70 a year. It's fantastic. Yeah. However, for your company, you need to be buying the business or the enterprise grade so that you get things like these retention policies and making sure that it is designed with an SLA. We've talked about this in the past too. An SLA is how much they guarantee that this service is going to be up. And Microsoft in Office 365 guarantees we're not going to be down for more than like 12 hours for the entire year, the whole year combined. The service, we guarantee it will be up for no less than that amount of time for you. And so as a business, that is absolutely critical that you use business class software and hardware. I run into a lot of companies that have, you know, QuickBooks, but they're just running it off of that one laptop and everyone else is trying to connect to that. The problem with that is, yes, it runs, so it's very hard to convince someone why they shouldn't be doing that, but it's running on a machine that's designed to break within the next couple of years. It's running on a laptop hard drive that's made out of the cheapest parts they can get to get them to fit in the smallest container possible. Whereas if you run your QuickBooks software or Sage, whatever it is, on an actual server, those servers are designed to run 24/7. They're designed to have hard drives fail and keep going. They're designed to have RAM chips fail and keep going. They're designed to have people reading and writing from those drives all day, every day, 24/7, and keep going. They're even designed that if one of the power outlets goes bad on it, there's another one in the back that's still set up, and so it still stays powered on to make sure that you stay up and running. And from the end user perspective, it looks like, well, I just jumped on QuickBooks. There's no difference between whether it was on this person's laptop or if it was on the server. But from your company's perspective, it is a huge difference in the reliability and having that level of redundancy.
I can see that, because if that laptop does vaporize, you're in trouble.
You're in a lot of trouble.
You're going to try and get all that stuff back. And on the cloud, you're good.
Right. That's right. That's
exactly
absolutely true.
Right. So at BitWizards, we look at technology from a business perspective and see how to shore up legacy and consumer systems to implement better class security and productivity solutions.
That's right. So that's something we look out for specifically for our clients, is to say, oh, I see what you're doing here, and you've got that home iPad that you're using to run everything off your business. Let's see what we can do to make this business class to make sure that you don't accidentally get knocked out of business because you're relying on something that wasn't designed to run this way.
And let's hope they listen to you.
Let's hope.
BitWizards from the Spellbook.
So From the Spellbook is where we demystify some technical geek speak each week. And I thought I would get really basic on this one and talk about the CPU in your computer, the CPU, which a lot of people say, oh, I get a help desk ticket, my CPU's broken. Wow, that's impressive that you know that. Because a CPU is not the desktop tower. A lot of people say, oh, that's my CPU, the desktop computer that's sitting on your desk. But it's a little different than that.
Right. We all remember the Intel Inside. I mean, that's the CPU. And CPUs have definitely gotten a little bit different than they were 10 years ago. It used to always be about gigahertz and megahertz, and the faster. Well, we've kind of reached a peak with that. So now it's cores. You know, how many cores can do work together to get you a faster speed, where our speeds are no longer the issue. It's more of the, you know, how fast can I get it done?
Right. That's so exactly what is a core exactly? Say they got the i5 and i7. What does that mean exactly?
So the amount of cores in there is really the amount of CPUs that are stacked on top of each other inside. And so what they've realized is there's only so fast we can move electrons around. And we're kind of capping out here at that 4 gigahertz. That's how many cycles per second. And that is a lot of operations it's doing per second. But it kind of capped out, because for a while there, the race was on and we were running 25 megahertz computers, then 33, and then 100, and we were all excited, and then we hit a gigahertz. But we kind of capped out. So now what we're doing is we're stacking those cores on top of each other. However, that does mean that the software has to be optimized for that so that it can use all of the cores within the CPU. And so that's one of the things we definitely look at is not just how fast is it, but how many cores does it have? And you even said about the i5 and the i7 and the i3, there are different levels of those types of CPUs. And this is good for people to know, because a lot of people, I don't think, necessarily know this information.
Right. So, I mean, if you're just sitting there, you've got grandma's laptop, and all grandma wants to do is check email and watch Netflix and get on Facebook, an i3 is perfectly fine. But if you're sitting there running Excel applications where you've got macros running, you've got high-end equations running and formulas and multi-sheets, you're going to need at least an i5 or an i7 running, because the cycles, the actual processing power of that, you don't realize how long you have to sit there and wait for this Excel sheet to calculate everything. And we hear it quite a bit. Where I've got a 6-year-old laptop and I'm trying to run a Microsoft program with pivot tables, and I know I'm getting a little technical, but
way technical.
Why
actually.
Is it going so slow? Well, you've got an i3 from 2008.
Yeah, okay. And I do see this in a lot of businesses, because when you're pricing up a bunch of computers for your employees on Dell, and you're looking at them and you go, oh, this option here is like $150 cheaper, and if I'm buying 12 of these things, that's going to save me a decent amount of money, I'll go with this, because what's the difference between an i3 and an i7 anyway? Well, the difference is actually quite significant. And so when your employees are struggling to get their work done, and so the way Intel makes their chips, there's other people making chips as well. AMD is the big other company, but in our cell phones and in our iPads and everything, we have ARM chips, but still the king right now is Intel on desktop and laptop computers, and they have it from a Core M is their absolute lowest grade CPU. That's for laptops, very, very low-end laptops. They have their i3, which really is meant for your kids or someone just, lightly
minimal
using a computer.
Use, yeah.
But for a business, you need an i5 or an i7 chip. Those are much higher, and they come out with a new one every single year. And then the highest level is an i9 that has like 6 or 12 cores inside of that thing. And so it really is smoking fast, but you're going to pay a massive premium for an i9, like maybe $600 more just for the chip, just not the rest of the computer, just for
the chip?
Just for that CPU chip.
Is that's like, your Bugatti right there.
That's
yeah,
right.
It sure is.
And so I would also recommend on that, don't have the tendency to say, oh, I'm just going to max it out all the way. You're not going to get a lot of benefit for that for the amount of money that you're going to spend.
And you guys are wizards. When you go in and you look at the businesses, you can kind of give them an idea, not only what you're going to need now, but looking forward, because you guys look forward. I know you do. You're saying, okay, well, your software and so on will be looking forward this way. Maybe you should consider this for the future.
That is absolutely right. It's us looking at it and saying, how do you use it? Because some technology, it does better with faster CPUs. Some does better with more RAM, and some of it does better with bigger graphics cards. And so we try to look and right-size that for each individual client. But that CPU is the first part, because that is the brains of your computer. That's where everything is happening in there. And so that's one of the first places that we look at. And so for us and our team of experts, we try to help you pick out the right computer hardware for the right job for you.
Yep, absolutely. Well, now would be a good time if you might want to recognize one of your clients.
Absolutely. So a big BitWizards thank you and shout out to our customers, Richard Peterman Law Firm. Rick and his team are located on Anchor Smith and Grimsley in Fort Walton Beach. Rick is a lifelong resident of Fort Walton Beach and is a founding member of ASG. Rick attended elementary and high school in Fort Walton Beach, a true local. Rick has a broad-based civil litigation practice in all state and federal courts. His primary practice for his entire career has been in commercial banking, real estate litigation, and transactions, construction, and lien litigations, mortgage and lien foreclosures, lending liability defense, and probate litigation.
Whew.
Yeah, that's a lot.
He's got a mouthful. Does the guy ever rest?
So Richard Peterman and his fantastic team have a stellar reputation, and we're privileged to take care of their IT from top to bottom. Thank you for choosing BitWizards to provide managed IT services for Richard Peterman Law. And thank you to the whole hardworking team there for allowing BitWizards to serve you. We love working with you.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's right.
Well, guys, we're just about out of time. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Sam, for coming in.